the XCast X-Files Podwatch, episode 99, covering Underneath and Improbable. I'm your host, Russ Hugo, and with me is Lauren Forey. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Russ.
How goes your evening?
So far, so good.
It's a classic lie, but I will take it. Underneath originally aired March 31st, 2002. Underneath is episode 12 of season 9. And was written by John Scheiben and also directed by John Scheiben. And Lauren, can you provide us with a brief summary of the episode, please?
Well, Underneath starts with an awkward Milli Vanilli reference to let you know that we are not in 2002 at the moment.
Quick question, Lauren.
Yes.
Quick question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I gotta make sure that this is accurate here. This is an important issue, but... which guy from Milli Vanilli will you marry, Rob or Fab?
To be honest, I didn't even know those were their names anymore.
Well, I think she said that.
Did she? Yeah, so, she does. I forget which one her friend says.
I don't know if we ever knew, but that's something I need to go back and watch now. I did not make a note. I feel like I really dropped the ball. In addition to kind of throwing this entire overview off the rails. So please continue. I'm sorry.
Well, the reason we don't get the answer to that all-important Milli Vanilli question is because that teenage girl, along with her mother and father, die about 2 minutes later. A man posing as a cable guy comes into their house. You can tell he's not really the cable guy because he just stands there awkwardly and doesn't say anything and has a blank work order. And a second later, it seems, everybody's on the ground, covered in blood. Police officers storm in to arrest him, and the one police officer happens to be what is meant to be a younger version of Agent Doggett. So we flash forward, I believe it's 13 years later, and this man that Doggett arrested, named Robert Fassel, is getting released because it turns out, thanks to newfound DNA evidence, or being able to test the DNA evidence now, it's determined that he, it is not his DNA that it was at the scene, so he can't be the killer. Doggett is very upset about this, and he has Reyes and Scully trying to work on it to figure out how this man could absolutely be the killer, and because he couldn't have been wrong about this guy. And it turns out that Doggett was not wrong. This man actually turns out to be some sort of alter ego caused by his Catholic guilt and repression that doesn't allow him to see his own faults or his own evil side. So it kind of builds up inside him, and he turns into this different bearded figure who stabs people to death with a screwdriver. And Doggett is able to catch him. He and Reyes trace him down or follow him, track him through the underground cable system, where he's collected tons and tons of corpses that he's hidden, more than they thought he'd ever killed. And it is Reyes who ends up shooting the man, shooting Bob Fassel, and killing him. So Doggett feels a little relieved that he did find the right man, but at the same time, he's confused because being the non-believer that he is, he just doesn't understand how it was possible that this one man could be two.
So judging here, I'm just going to go out on a limb. I'm consulting some tea leaves and your voice tone that you don't have the most favorable view of this episode. How do you feel about it overall?
Well, I'm going to be honest here. It's been a long time since I watched anything from season 9. I watched it when it originally aired because I wanted to stick with the show and see it through. And after that, I just focused on rewatching Mulder and Scully episodes. Because Scully's kind of like just mopey in the background in this one and doesn't have much to do and looks a little depressed and doesn't have any banter. And I was actually, though, surprised that I enjoyed this one more than I thought I would. I thought it gave some nice emotional weight to Doggett's character, gave some insight in the type of cop he was, and that he wants to get who this murderer is. He wants the truth, not for himself, but he really does want it for the victims and the victims' families. And so I admired his tenacity in that, and I liked how, even though he saw this man change, he saw what happened, he saw it was the same guy, that even though he saw it with his own eyes, he still has a doubt that he's not just going to blindly accept what he's seen. So I did enjoy it. It's kind of like a Doggett character study. I did enjoy it for that aspect.
And because I think this is the first episode in the Podwatch that you've discussed Doggett or Reyes episode, and you mentioned you generally don't prefer season 8 or 9, abstracting that because it could be the stories or whatever else, and understanding and admitting that you prefer Mulder and Scully as a pair, how do you feel overall about the idea of shifting to Doggett and Reyes and the characters as a whole?
I think this one showed a good shift in a story that works for Doggett. That gives us more, like I said, gives us more insight into his character and his motivations and what's important to him. Like, along the way, he finds out his ex-partner planted evidence at the scene, and even though he wants to convict this guy, he thinks that's the absolute wrong. I think it's assumed he turns that guy in, turns him over for doing that. So it shows the real breadth of his character. Reyes in this one doesn't get too much to do. She's just kind of like a figurehead. And one thing I noticed is that, you know, there's scenes where Scully's just sitting at the background at the table watching Reyes and Doggett banter. And it's very much like you can see it on her face. I've been here before. I've done this. I'm going to let you two just kind of banter it out because Mulder and I went through the stage in our relationship already. So as an episode that to showcase Reyes, I don't think it does much for her character, but for Doggett, I think it really works.
Definitely. I mean, at least they let Reyes shoot somebody at the end.
Yes.
And that's something. That's good character development.
I wish it might have been more interesting, nothing against Reyes, but they go in this tunnel, and it's not a sewer, so she falls in water, and it's not sewage. And it might have been more interesting if maybe it was, but that's just random.
Get it, I'll call back to the host. Mulder had to do it, so why not them?
Exactly.
One thing that I thought was a bit odd, there's a kind of a contradictory statement when they were doing the DNA analyses, and they said the first analysis was it's 100 million to one chance that it's the same guy. But then they do the results again and find that there's 12 of the 13 DNA chains are the same and that they are remarkably similar and possibly a blood relative. I was very confused about how two tests of the same material would have such different interpretations. Did they explain that and I just missed it?
I don't think they did. I mean, it seems like more just like a plot point that they wanted to put in there, especially since it's Scully. The very beginning of this episode, Scully agrees to rerun the DNA for Doggett, and Scully doesn't find that, and then all of a sudden they do. So either they weren't... I don't know, but do you think... I don't know as much about DNA testing, but if it was that similar, you think they would have noticed that?
Yeah, see, I don't know anything about DNA testing either, but the phrase 100 million to one chance is the same guy versus remarkably similar as laypeople terms or possibly a blood relative, it seems a bit contradictory, but it's possible that I completely missed something.
I'm sure if somebody out there can correct us on our DNA analysis.
Please do. I mean, that's what that the social media, the XCast blog and the Twitter account, the X_cast. Please share your knowledge with us. One thing I had an issue with is I actually liked and assumed there was a lot of foreshadowing that the lawyer who was assisting the killer was in on it or knew something about the murderer or potentially was the murderer. Just a lot of the way that she was framed in the door. There's a door scene which comes to visit him. It looks very suspicious. There's the whole issue of why in the world would someone take a released criminal, even if you assume they're exonerated. They've been in prison in maximum security for, 13 years, and invite them to your house with no security whatsoever, no vetting, no counselor. That was very unbelievable. And the only way I could really get to following that plot was with the assumption that, oh, it's because she's the killer or somehow she knows what's going on. And at the very end, no, she just was just doing it as a good Samaritan. And that really didn't work for the flow for me. What were your thoughts about that?
I mean, that would have made a lot more sense to explain her behavior either. She was the killer herself, or maybe she was like one of those weird people that gets obsessed with serial killers. So she believes in him. Yeah, so she wants him close. Yeah, she really is just a good Samaritan. But at the same time, you think this is an educated woman. She's a lawyer. She's successful. She must, you know her stuff and be good at what she does. And people like that don't normally take the risk of putting their clients who were accused of serial killing in their own house. Like, there's usually, they keep that healthy separation of work and home life, and this lady just had no concern for that whatsoever. And that did strike me as odd. I I've never heard of, I'm sure there's some out there, but I've never heard of a lawyer, especially an insanely rich one, as she is made out to be, taking their released, you know, client into their own home. Even after the next day, she's like, oh, did you go through my stuff? I found my drawers. Well, we have to keep these boundaries. I'm like, well, if you wanted to keep the boundaries, don't put them in your house in the first place.
Yeah, and especially don't keep them in your house when they're going through your drawers. That's, yeah, the creep factor is pretty high. But even, let's say, he's a harmless individual, is it going to be best for them to go into that environment? Seems like a halfway area that can make a nice transition with counseling and therapy. Nah, just hang out alone in this big house and try not to go crazy.
She had the money too. I mean, if anything, she said, you know, her parents are rich and she inherited all this. Why not, you know, rent him his own apartment for 6 months?
Yes.
Or something, you know?
And yeah.
So yeah, no, I think it could have been much more interesting if you said she had some sort of connection to either being the murderer herself or like just being creepily obsessed with maybe murderers or serial killers.
Yeah, because they could have then, if they do that, then it allows it to work as a red herring, which ties into the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out at the end the twist. Poof. I do want to note earlier when you said 13 years later, that is also an episode of Millennium from season 3. Pointless reference.
But it is a
Chris Carter show, so I have to throw this in here.
And I apologize for that. Finally, before we wrap it up here,
what do you actually think about the concept behind this episode? The idea that a repressed guilt can cause for a complete physical disassociated doppelganger that'll come out and kill people.
I think it could maybe work in the sense if they drew out more of that Jekyll and Hyde connection, because Doggett references that once. It's like, oh, it's like some sort of Jekyll and Hyde thing, because that is a story about letting your repressed self out and your id go nuts, and it does change the physical stature of yourself. And Split, not to ruin the movie, Split does something similar where James McAvoy's character has all these different personalities and they do change how he's represented physically to the worst case, a monstrous extreme version of himself. So there is the potential for that making sense. Did it get kind of pulled off? I think the bearded guy for me, and maybe this was intentional, I kept calling him homeless bearded Jesus when he was on screen, because he just kind of looked like a creepy homeless Jesus, and you couldn't really see that there was any physical connection between the regular guy and his alter ego. And I think maybe if they could have given some sort of physical trait that looked the same, I could have found that more believable.
At the end of the episode, I get the impression that when the one appears, the other disappears. But every other time we see it throughout the episode, it's as if they're in the same room together, or he sees the homeless person, as you describe, across the street. And yes, at the end of the episode, we could then assume, oh, that was just in his head. But the way it's framed and filmed, it isn't clear that it's in his head versus the other thing. It's not really clear what is happening, how the transformation happens for me. And so at the end, when it's like, oh, it's the same guy. And it can only be one of them. Or it's actually he's just transforming. Then it would have been neat to see a transformation scene.
Mm-hmm. I think it's something that much later, Bates Motel, spoiler alert.
Jeez, spoilers left and right. Good grief.
That the final season of Bates Motel does really well when it's just Norman and Norma is part of him, like she exists, and they do physically fight, but then they do show what it looks like to somebody else. It's not inside Norman's head, how he's kind of fighting with himself, so that you can understand how that works. And I think you're right, we were missing kind of that transformation or that outside look, outsider's perspective of what that looks like.
Well, great. Any last thoughts on the episode before we give it a rating?
One last thing is that I like Scully was able to use her Catholic power, as I called it, kind of reach out to him on her faith-based side and try to reach that man. And it doesn't quite work, but it allowed Scully to give, you know, have a little bit more purpose in this episode. And I think maybe they could have done more with that since Scully's faith is such a huge part of the show.
Yeah, and there's also possible if they're going to go... They don't have to, but I mean, you have a lot of options to go into mysticism if you're dealing with Catholicism in a show like The X-Files, and they had in the past. But the fact that it's just kind of like thrown out as, yeah, it's transforming because of repressed Catholic guilt. Yeah. But there's no context. They're not dealing with any symbolism. They're not dealing with anything else going on. it just felt a little too dry for me.
Yeah, they focused much more on what Doggett was going through. And actually, yeah. Doggett has a line, and I wrote it down. He says, "How the hell to you does that make sense?" When he's talking, I think it's one of Reyes's theories. I'm like, thank you for saying that, Doggett. Because that's what we're all thinking right now, that there hasn't been enough for any of this to make sense. And I'm glad. I think that's what made me like Doggett in this episode, too. He's like, he admits it. It's like, this is nuts. I can't believe this.
Well, I'm going to come out on the limb and just be totally blunt with you and say, I'm a big Doggett fan. Even this episode here, or some of the weaker episodes in season 9, I still generally think his performance, he's just Robert Patrick. Whether he pulls it off all the time or not, he's always given 110% and can make some questionable material watchable for me. That was one of the saving graces for this episode here. What would you rate it out of 10?
Give this one a 6. Keep it on the positive half because, like I said, I really liked what it gives Doggett to work with in this episode, but the rest of it, I think it's just got too many holes to really work for me.
Good score. I would give it a 4.5 out of 10, and that's out of assuming an even curve of X-Files episodes placed evenly from 1 to 10. I think there's a lot of good acting in it. But overall, and the direction is actually pretty nice. I think there's some great shots, and the pacing of the transitions and the editing, it's all great. But overall, the plot is just too much of a mess, and it's too dry for the topic that they're dealing with, in my opinion. So 4.5. IMDb actually gave it 7.3, which way back on Podwatch episode 12, when you and I discussed Born Again, that was the score it got.
So
similarly rated for what it's worth. So now we're going to go on to the second episode. Second episode we're going to talk about tonight is Improbable. So it was originally aired April 7th, 2002, and it is the 13th episode of Season 9. It's written and directed by the show's founder, Chris Carter. This episode follows a serial killer that is being followed himself by a mysterious man played by Burt Reynolds. Has a lot to do with numerology, and Reyes being particularly inclined towards the subject matter is hot on the trail and stumbling into interesting situations that cross paths with the serial killer. Burt Reynolds plays, again, an enigmatic character that hints at something beyond a mortal man, although it never comes out and says it exactly, until all three of our main characters, Scully, Reyes, and Doggett, finally collide with Reynolds' character and the serial killer in a garage, all set to jovial, various Italian music, and I believe it was primarily Italian.
I think so, yeah.
Set to quite a few musical pieces and montages, including ending with a very cheerful, potentially Chris Carter take on Fellini music video at the end, even closing with Chris Carter's credits being written in Italian. Lauren, what did you think about Improbable?
I'm going to be honest, I have no clue what is supposed to be happening in this episode. It has so much stuff that you think would make it work. It's got Burt Reynolds, who is awesome and hilarious. You know, you have Ellen Green from the original Little Shop of Horror movie with Rick Moranis, who I love, and I love that movie. You have a lot of hilarious scenes with the FBI agents back at the office, you know, interacting with Reyes and kind of having a lot of Mulder-esque moments. You got the great music. It should be one of those, like, good, humorous episodes like Bad Blood. And for me, it just doesn't work. It doesn't quite pull it off. And I've been trying to think of why that is, but there's something uneven in the tone for me. And that weird musical number that you mentioned at the end, it went over my head what he was trying to do or what that was meant to be a reference for. And I'm still trying to figure out what happened here.
I would concur on almost all of those points. The biggest issue I have is the tone. And what bothers me is we have this cute character played by Burt Reynolds with this very jovial, cheerful music, and these horrific murders happening. And that contrast can normally work, but in this instance, it doesn't. It doesn't for me. It's just that we're supposed to be happy at the end because, well, 7 people were murdered? horrifically. And this character of Burt Reynolds, some people say is God or is the manifestation of luck or the city or, you know, the spirit of whatever.
And we'll get into what you think
he may be. And as if he was involved, and some people argue that was helping the agents, not helping the agents. But at the beginning, he's trying to convince the killer to change his path, which implies that he's trying to intervene, does that, but is essentially completely ineffective. And it's cute and it's joking. They've done lots of X-Files episodes where they don't involve murder. And you've got a character like this. And I think this episode, if they would have made it more, even something like, let's go back to War of the Cockroaches, where there's deaths or there's drama, you've got the tension, but it's not this very horrific murder. And just, I don't think that balance was ever struck. I could never get into the whimsy at all.
No, because you see, you're right, because you have, like I said, you bring in Ellen Green, who, you know, can do great things with comedy. I was like, oh, that's great that she's in this episode, something, she's going to use that comedic talent, and she never really gets a chance. And then all of a sudden, like, her face, her battered and bruised face is up on a bulletin board. And for me, associating her with Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors, who is abused by her dentist boyfriend and that, I was like, oh, it's like Audrey's just been murdered by the dentist, and this is uncomfortable for me to watch. And
The person's murdered, and then there's the newspaper, as that's what you're talking about, says her number was up.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
That's just cruel. It's not funny.
Yeah, it could see a tabloid doing that, but the tabloids that are that crass are usually have like bat people on the covers or something.
Yeah. And that font did not look tabloid.
No.
It looked a little more respectable of a publication. Well, okay. I think we agree about those negatives and hopefully figuring out why. But there are good things. And you mentioned some of them, and I'll reinforce, I really do like the rapport between Doggett and Reyes in this episode. I think that is the positive cheerfulness that I could buy into. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is an episode where I think for me, there was a nice balance between Doggett and Reyes and Scully in their kind of rapport with one another. There's just some great scenes where with Reyes standing when she comes back to the office and all the FBI agents are cheering her. They applaud her for this great work she's done. It's like, oh, this is a great moment. This is a big win for her. And they ask, well, tell us how you made this connection. And she starts going off about the numerology, and it's just like with Mulder going off about, well, you know, something about aliens that nobody's going to believe. And she's just so excited about it that she doesn't notice their reaction. And poor, like, Scully and Doggett are over there shaking their heads like, why couldn't you have just made something up? And I thought that was a great, great moment for her character. And later when her and Scully get to play checkers when they're locked in the parking garage. That, like, there were individual scenes that worked really well, even if as a whole it didn't mesh.
Yes, and actually going to that checker scene, I love the quick cut where Scully's playing and then it cuts to her shooting the lock on the door behind them.
It's like, that is so Scully. That's exactly what she would be doing by this point. One game of checkers, I'm shooting this door open.
One thing, I want to go down on a limb here, that this is directed by Chris Carter, and someone else here probably have already made this comparison, but this is basically the pre-pilot for The After. I don't know if you noticed that.
Remind me, what is The After?
The After was the pilot he made for Amazon, the Amazon, Amazon TV studios or whatever, where it takes place basically as an apocalyptic story. And what happens for the first half of the story is the main characters, who all have coincidentally like similar birthdays, there's a numerology element and there's religious elements similar to Burt Reynolds' character, but they all end up locked in a parking garage.
Chris Carter has a thing for parking garages and numerology.
You know, he's like, oh, I'm gonna make this into an entire series and play it not comedic. Well, there are other things I think that are positive, in addition to that I'll give it, is that being, I think, that it's Carter and that he was able to swing more attention to detail as the showrunner, there's a lot of really nice touches, and that makes it kind of more painful that the episode doesn't work as well as it should. I mean, things like the hair curls being 666 and all the placements of everything, it's never lingered on too long. It's just very nicely balanced details everywhere. It's very cute, and I think it could have been, maybe would have Darren Morgan look at the script and change the tone a little bit. It could have been something really, really great.
Yeah, a little bit of a script edit, I think, would have helped.
That's when you're in charge of everything and you have nobody calling anything you do into question. Things have trouble. Well, any last comments you want to make about Improbable before we move on?
Yeah, one thing I noticed, actually not about the episode, but I looked up the actor that plays the serial killer, who's credited as Mad Wayne, is actually the creator of the show Rectify that was recently on air for a few seasons. Yeah, so he did some other acting, and he's the creator of that show. So he's gone on to do some interesting and well-reviewed work there also. So I always like looking up and seeing where these random guest stars or guest appearances, what they've done since the X-Files, and that I like that.
Yeah, good catch, yeah. Yeah, X-Files is potentially greatest media or television launching pad in history. So that's another one to add to the bank that I didn't know of. Thanks for the extra research. What would you give this episode out of 10?
I'm going to have to go down and give it a 4 because, like I said, there are scenes I like if you just isolate those scenes. But as a whole, I just don't know what's happening.
Totally fair. I'm going to have to actually give it a slightly higher score of a 6 because I really like the acting with Doggett and Reyes and Scully. And I think the direction is a lot of fun. The plot and the tone knock it down. If we would have something else, it could have been an 8 potentially. So, but I'm going to leave it at a 6. And IMDb actually gave this a 7.6, which is only 0.3 higher than Underneath. There you go. I actually was reading some of the reviews. And the reviews basically bounced between 1 star and 9 stars. It was
this is a love it or you hate it one.
It really is. Although you and I are kind of not that. We're just,
Higher hopes for it.
Maybe we're just jaded and cold at this point. Nothing can change our opinions either way. Everything is lukewarm. Thanks again, Lauren, for chatting about the show. And thanks to all the listeners out there for listening. You can visit the XCast on Twitter at @TheX_cast, or go to our Facebook page and group, which is the XCast X-Files Podcast Fan Group. Next episode will be episode 100. We're going to be talking about the episodes Scary Monsters and Jump the Shark. So until next time, trust no one.